Welcome back to season 3 of Snubs and Dubs, where we're talking about the snubs and dubs of the 74th Academy Award for Best Picture. I'm your host, Kyle Tobiasen, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Miller. Jason, how you doing?
Kyle, I'm doing pretty good this week. How about you?
Oh, it's good. It's been a good but busy week. I haven't actually done any other watching because it's been so busy. Did you do any other watching?
I didn't do any other watching.
Yeah, either. I mean, there's lots of TV going on. Yes. I've been keeping up with House of the Dragon, and I've been keeping up with She-Hulk. Mm-hmm. Haven't touched Rings of Power yet. But
how is those shows?
House of the Dragon, I'm kind of staying on my toes because, you know, we have been burned before, but it's really good. The quality is clearly, you know, where it needs to be for an expensive Game of Thrones show. It does kind of feel like you're right back into Game of Thrones world back when it was like still good.
Pre-finale.
A lot of characters, a lot of political intrigue sort of thing, and obviously a lot of dragons, which is really cool. So I've been liking it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm holding my breath, though. I think everyone is. I think everyone's like, okay, you know, we're giving it a shot, but we've been burned before. And so hopefully this House of Dragon doesn't burn us again. So
doesn't drag on to a bad finale.
And She-Hulk I've been okay with. It's been like just kind of light fun. Yeah. I know that there's been a lot of people that have been absolutely shitting on it, and I don't necessarily know why people have hated it to the extent that they have hated it.
Fair.
Other than, like, you know, it's a woman.
Yeah. So. I'm willing to bet that if She-Hulk was just Hulk, this is the kind of thing that no one really talks about, and people enjoy it who watch it, and people who don't care don't watch it.
Yeah.
But I feel like having a woman lead just makes everyone a bit more vitriolic about it.
Totally. And I just, like, I don't know why people can't just relax about things. Like, there was a post-credit scene of She-Hulk twerking with Megan Thee Stallion.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why, but everyone exploded about it. It was like it offended their entire family. I was like, dude, it's a post-credits tag. It has no relevance to the MCU. And it's just She-Hulk, you know, shaking her ass a little bit.
Yeah.
First of all, you should be thankful. And second of all, there's been all sorts of dancing and, you know, other cringe scenes in the MCU, but like people made such a big deal about She-Hulk shaking her ass with Megan Thee Stallion.
Kyle,
and I just, I don't know.
I will have you know that twerking killed both of my parents.
Yeah, so I don't know. I've been enjoying it. It's funny. It's light and funny, and they've got lots of cameos. Daredevil's coming up. I'm really excited. That's all I've been keeping up with.
Oh, you know what? I've kind of been watching one thing, but it's not really like movie or TV related. It's a YouTube series.
Ooh.
It's a riff off the YouTube series What Makes This Song Great.
Okay.
It's called What Makes This Song Stink. Okay. And it's about bad songs. And it was recommended to me by our friend Tim.
Nice.
And I watched the first episode and I wasn't sold because they decided to come for Three Doors Down Kryptonite.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, Superman? What's that song called?
I don't remember.
I think it's Superman.
Oh, yes. Okay. Now I'm hearing it in my head. I couldn't tell you the exact title though.
Yeah. The song fucking rips. Yeah. So I wasn't having any of that. All of his criticisms seemed to be dumb. All of them were, this song is simple. Mm. But what he forgets is simple. Absolutely rips. A little 3-chord rock song is what I need almost all times of day. So I wasn't having that, but he brings it back. He has a really extended episode on Weezer with some much deserved criticism. Clearly it's coming from a fan who's been burned like all good Weezer fans.
Right.
And the most recent one I watched was on Train's Hey Soul Sister.
Mm-hmm.
And I was ready for a hate on fest. That song blows. I was so happy with all the criticisms delivered at it.
Oh my God.
He had a surprise feature from a band I enjoy, Dr. Dog.
Mm.
So it was a great time. I'd recommend that YouTube series so far. But episode 1 came from you and I wasn't ready for it.
Okay.
I haven't fully recovered.
I wonder if they'll do an episode on this Reddit song. Have you been hearing this meme of this guy who had this really weird sex song that he played? Oh my God.
I avoided the main thread till someone said it to me and I'm like, well, I'm not going to read it, but I'm curious what the song is. Yeah. I was not prepared. Holy. Techno someone releasing the air out of balloons. God, it was bad. I still haven't read the thread. I just know the broad strokes and listened to 25 seconds of the song and I couldn't. I had to stop. Oh, man. Oh,
it's quality. And it's been like making the rounds on TikTok. Just people like so confused as to how this man was having sex to this song.
And for apparently 2+ years.
Yeah, with other women, not just his girlfriend.
I will say, any woman who has endured that song through sex, you are a soldier. Thank you for your service.
Okay, well, of course, it's season 3 of Snubs and Does. We've been covering the films from the year 2001. And so for episode 6, we are talking about Ghost World. Had you seen or heard of it before? Probably not.
I've never interacted with anything related to Ghost World, actually. So, nope, not even a bit. Kyle, how about you?
The only interaction I had was when I was doing the research for this season, and I saw that it was well-reviewed, and it had a very young Scarlett Johansson. That was the extent of my knowledge about it. I did not even know that Steve Buscemi was in it until I turned it on. And so, like, I was going in completely blind. I had the sense that it was probably, like, a teen comedy sort of thing, but, like, completely blind. I had no sense of it.
This seemed like a Dazed and Confused for a slightly more modern era. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally. Well, if you're interested in Ghost World or the graphic novel it was originally based on, I've included the links to the physical media related to it in the show notes. If you buy through that link, it'll help out our show. Or if you have any other Amazon shopping to do, follow the general link to help out our show in the process. Reminder that this is going to be a spoiler-filled conversation, so if you haven't seen Ghost World yet or read the graphic novel and you want to, go ahead and do so. I've also included time codes in the show notes so you can skip around to your heart's desire. But without further ado, let's get into it. Ghost World is a 2001 black comedy film directed by Terry Zwigoff. It is written by Daniel Clowes and Terry Zwigoff, based on Daniel Clowes' graphic novel of the same name. It stars Thora Birch as Enid Coleslaw. Her last name is Coleslaw,
apparently.
I did not
know that delightful detail.
Scarlett Johansson as Rebecca Doppelmeyer. Steve Buscemi as Seymour. Brad Renfro as Josh. Elena Douglas as Roberta Ellsworth, and Bob Balaban as Enid's father. He doesn't have a name. He is just Enid's father.
That's all he deserves.
It has a runtime of 112 minutes and it released on July 20th, 2001. Jason, what did you think of Ghost World?
I really, every single scene, wanted to like it more than I did. There's something about like the quality of it that I did enjoy. Definitely not for all of the almost two. I know, how long was it? 100 something?
Yeah, just under two hours.
Yeah, like for all of just under 2 hours, I didn't get into it the whole way. There was a unique quality to it. I think it's an interesting comic book movie adaptation, but I don't know if I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
What about you, Kyle?
I found that this was just aggressively not for me. I don't know what it was about it. Like, I mean, I do know it was clearly the time period and the characters themselves. I just found that I couldn't relate to anybody in there except maybe Seymour a little bit because
Kyle.
I mean, like,
that's
kind of sad and pathetic because, like, I get that the whole movie's point is to say that they're rejecting adulthood and rejecting the concept of moving on from high school and the notion of just like bland adulthood.
Yeah,
because like we'll get to it, but there's scenes later where Rebecca is kind of conforming to traditional, you know, sense of adulthood and growing up, whereas Enid is just aggressively not conforming to that and just kind of refuses to. And I just found her like to be a really unsympathetic protagonist, and I couldn't enjoy watching her at all, really.
I think if either of us had had the same emotional experience that she had, we would probably relate to it and enjoy it more.
Yeah.
And I think that's what was missing from my watch of it, is I just couldn't put myself in those shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So watching it, she just kind of came off as annoying in parts.
Yeah.
And just not like too much of her own problems were caused by her to be a fully empathetic scenario for me.
Yeah. And I was just kind of waiting for her to like, I don't know, snap out of it a little bit, like maybe have some sort of realization that not everything in the world is total shit and you need to reject everything about it. But like, I don't really feel like she comes to that conclusion. And that's probably the point.
Yeah.
Like, they don't want Enid to become that character. Otherwise, maybe that's a sad ending. And like, I understand who this is for, and it's just, it's not for me. And I get that, like, this is clearly a well-loved movie. Even like through Letterboxd, I was surprised considering how some of the language used in this movie very of the time. Even like 5 minutes in, you texted me and you were like, oh boy, there's like, they're calling people, you know, R words and it's like slang for black people later that like, I understand the context of it, but maybe could have been a little bit more graceful.
Yeah.
Probably was in the original comic, but yeah, I don't know. So it kind of took me out of it a little bit. And also I just couldn't get into Enid's character.
That's fair. Do we want to drop a plot?
Let's drop a plot.
Continuing on?
Sure. Jason's going to read straight through the plot. If you don't need the refresher, you can skip right to the discussion by following the time codes in the show notes. But here's Ghost World.
Best friends Enid and Rebecca face the summer after their high school graduation with no plans for their future other than to find jobs and live together. These girls are cynical social outcasts, but Rebecca is more popular with boys than Enid. Enid's diploma is withheld on the condition that she attends a remedial art class. Even though she is a talented artist, her art teacher, Roberta, believes that art must be socially meaningful and dismisses Enid's sketches as nothing more than light entertainment. The girls see a personal ad in which a lonely middle-aged man named Seymour asks a woman he recently met to contact him. Enid makes a prank phone call to Seymour, pretending to be the woman and inviting him to meet her at a diner. The two girls and their friend Josh secretly watch Seymour at the diner and make fun of him. Enid soon begins to feel sympathy for Seymour, and they follow him to his apartment building. Later, they find him selling vintage records in a garage sale. Enid buys an old blues album from him, and they become friends. She decides to try to find women for him to date. Enid has meanwhile been attending her remedial art classes, and she persuades Seymour to lend her an old poster depicting a grotesquely caricatured black man, which was once used as a promotional tool by the fried chicken franchise, now known as Cook's Chicken, but was previously known as a slur for black people chicken, where Seymour works in corporate. Enid presents the poster in class as a social comment about racism, and Roberta is so impressed with the concept that she offers Enid a scholarship to an art college. Seymour receives a phone call from Dana, the intended recipient of his personal ad. Enid encourages him to pursue a relationship with Dana, but she becomes unexpectedly jealous when he does so. Enid and Rebecca's lives start to diverge. While Enid has been spending time with Seymour, Rebecca starts working at a coffee shop. Enid gets a job at a movie theater so she can afford to rent an apartment with Rebecca, but her cynical attitude and reluctance to upsell concessions gets her fired on her first day. The girls argue and Rebecca abandons the idea of living with Enid. When Enid's poster is displayed in an art show, school officials find it so offensive they force Roberta to give her a failing grade and revoke the scholarship Enid was offered. Enid turns to Seymour for solace, resulting in a drunken one-night stand. Seymour breaks up with Dana and is called to account at work when the slur chicken poster is publicized in a local newspaper. He unsuccessfully tries to contact Enid, only for Rebecca to tell him about Enid's prank phone call, describing the way they mocked him at the diner. Seymour is upset and goes to the convenience store where Josh works. Another customer ends up in a violent confrontation with Seymour, resulting in his being injured and hospitalized. Enid visits him in the hospital to apologize. After everything that has occurred, Enid gives in to her childhood fantasy of running away from home and disappearing. She has seen an old man, Norman, continually waiting at an out-of-service bus stop for a bus that will never come. Finally, as Enid watches from across the street, Norman boards an out-of-service bus. The next day, while Seymour discusses the summer's event with his therapist, Enid returns to the bus stop and boards the out-of-service bus when it arrives. Post-credits scene shows an alternate version of Seymour's scene in the convenience store in which he wins the fight and is not injured. And that is Ghost World.
Yeah.
Shockingly devoid of any ghosts.
Yeah, I liked that post-credit scene. I didn't actually know there was one until I was reading Letterboxd reviews after I watched it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, there's a post-credit scene? So I had to go back and look at it, and it was just Steve Buscemi beating up a bunch of men, and it was fun.
I didn't watch it. I didn't know it was in there.
Oh,
was
no?
In the Wikipedia plot.
Yeah, it's just like, it's just a goofy alternate take. Like, it's not anything that you need to see, but yeah, it was a fun thing to view. But Ghost World as a whole, what did you feel? Because I feel like I went on a bit of a rant at the start.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's not a bad slice of life movie. I do enjoy the concepts that are at play. I think it's an interesting perspective that we don't get that often, of like the women just after high school perspective.
Yeah.
But you see like Dazed and Confused, Boyhood, like there's so many examples of that exact time of life for men. So it's kind of fun to see a different take on that.
Yeah.
But I just felt like there wasn't enough of a story to keep it going. I felt the relationship with Seymour almost wasn't explored enough, and they maybe could have gone into what would have happened with those two after the hookup, because I feel like it's both creepy and that Seymour is significantly older than her, but also she seemed more in control of life than even Seymour did. So like they had an interesting dynamic that I would have liked to see them have a bit more interaction.
You say you wanted to see more?
Yeah, I feel like we didn't get enough of them.
Yeah.
I would have liked to see like them actually approach their one night stand and have some kind of dialogue around that or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. Everything felt like it just wasn't interesting enough to really keep me there, but I do enjoy the movie that was made still.
Okay.
How do you feel?
I didn't really find that I enjoyed it very much, but like, I also can appreciate what it was and who it's for and recognize the fact that it's clearly not, I'm not the person that this movie is for in a lot of senses, but you know, even when that's the case, sometimes you can still enjoy a movie. And I just found that I couldn't really get behind it. And it started like, it was really early when I just realized that I wasn't quite vibing with it. And I also found that I didn't like the relationship they had with Seymour.
No, because it's not a good relationship.
Yeah. And also, like, I never really found a character outside of Seymour in some, like, capacity that, like, I could really root for or get behind. Because I was never really rooting for Enid because she was just rude to everybody. She was just like not nice, especially to Seymour, because like that whole responding to the ad and then going to the diner, just like watching him and then following him home and then proceeding to like go to his record sale place afterwards to like toy with him. Like, I get that Enid had some sort of sick interest in that.
Yeah.
But, like, I just found it really creepy. And then, obviously, it's even more creepy after they, like, get together. And her sick fascination with this, like, clearly pathetic man is turned into, like, a sick attraction, in a sense. And even Rebecca, like, I read in the graphic novel that they have more time devoted to both Rebecca and Enid. Like, it's kind of split 50-50 between the two. And where in this movie, you don't actually get that much Rebecca. And so I kind of felt that absence too, in a sense, because like they have this friendship and obviously it's showing that they're growing apart, but like they're growing apart just by them not hanging out, basically.
Yeah.
And then you catch up with Rebecca at instances where she's like trying to move on with her life and actually go through with this plan that she thought that she had set with Enid. And Enid is still kind of rejecting those notions. But then also Rebecca wasn't very nice either. Like, she was like outwardly rude to Seymour to his face when they went to the apartment later. And like, I get that, you know, you had to get that point where she revealed the origins of their relationship was not in good faith. But like, she was still just like not nice to people. I don't know.
Yeah. So I feel like there's a better way to make her be the foil, where clearly she's the one growing up where Enid's not. But because she doesn't get any screen time for that, you just kind of check back in with her every 30 minutes or so. And now, oh, now she has a job. Now she's looking at homes and she has a job. Now she's moving in. But you don't get any actual like emotional growth or like any character development other than just she achieves these milestones when Enid doesn't.
Yeah.
And yeah, that would have been a better way to have their relationship. Just give it more screen time. Maybe have more use for some of the scenes that are in there. Because they spend a lot of time devoted to Enid and Seymour's relationship that doesn't need to be. Because like my beat on it is that Enid, instead of wanting to grow up and having her own life, she just kind of vicariously tries to do that through Seymour so she doesn't have to do anything.
Yeah.
And then once he does actually experience some success, she goes in to derail it because now he's outgrown her, which is a sad state of affairs. That's like Mo from The Simpsons one-upping you.
Well, yeah, because she hates that he is actually moving on in life, too.
Yeah, like he's got genes now.
Yeah. The idea that like a woman could come into his life and like he could be set on a more positive track, even if maybe he doesn't necessarily like being with her. But also, I guess in a small victory, Seymour does break up with, what's the girl's name?
Dana.
Dana, because he realizes that he doesn't like being with her and that maybe he's just being with her because he's not really got many options. And so like that kind of works, but it's only because Enid shows interest and he thinks that he has his relationship now with Enid. And so it's just like, it's all back and forth and that's nothing really feels that positive. And like, I also saw an interpretation of the end of the movie that people think that Enid commits suicide and that her going on that bus is like a symbol of that, basically. I don't know if I got that interpretation at all.
No, she didn't. She never seemed suicidal.
No, not really. She just seemed to like not want to move on. She was kind of stuck in that state. And I appreciate that this movie wanted to take on, and I guess this graphic novel wanted to take on that period of time, because like you mentioned, there are some movies that take on this period of time, but a large majority of teen coming of age movies are set in high school leading up to the graduation. Mm-hmm. And like the graduation is this big point where like you're going to move on and you're going to become a person and grow up and, you know, move on with your life. But it doesn't really capture that in between period that much where like people don't know what they want to do. And then obviously there's that character, that really uppity character that thinks they're friends with her, who like seems to be that type of person who has their whole thing figured out, you know, but even though they're going to be an actress or, yeah, you know, whatever it is, but they have a thing and Enid hates that. And I guess even Rebecca hates that too. But like, I appreciate where they want it to be. I just didn't like the execution so much.
Yeah. I feel like anytime the theory behind an ending is, oh, they were actually dead, or, yeah, oh, it was just, it's always like, that's just the most simple way to interact with this media.
Totally.
There's nothing else indicating that. That's just a way that kind of works over that one scene. I feel like she just left, either like physically left the town to go somewhere else, or like emotionally is checking out of the things that she was at before, because she's never chosen a path or done anything and her one goal is to kind of leave. And I feel like maybe she does actually do that and she does just leave.
Yeah. And I know I have an interesting fact later about some of the executives behind the movie and how they wanted to clear up that interpretation at the end by adding things. We'll get to that later, but like they were not better choices.
Yeah, but I feel like this is a movie that would actually benefit from a more clear-cut ending, just because there was so little going on in the rest of it that it, I think, would help out the narrative if there is an endpoint to it.
Yeah.
But just having such a nebulous middle and then also an ending with no real indication just made me feel like I didn't go anywhere with it and I wasn't taken somewhere.
Yeah. Well, do you want to hear what other people thought about it?
Let's hear what other people thought about it.
Yeah, because as I mentioned before, there was a lot of love for this movie. It actually has a 93% critics score on Rotten Tomatoes.
Damn.
And an 84% audience. So a lot of love for this movie. And I was actually curious as if maybe it got a lot of love at the time or if it got a lot of love later. And I think the Letterboxd, having been a more modern platform, still also being so high, was like a kind of an indicator that people do like this movie.
Yeah.
Even though it's a time capsule in a sense too of the early 2000s. IMDb is a 7.3. Metacritic is an 88. So yeah, a lot of critical love here. On a budget of $7 million. So very modest. It only made $8.8 million though. So
yeah, I mean, it's a cult hit. So it's probably had a steady stream of some kind of revenue since, yeah, but I don't imagine this was any kind of blockbuster when it came out.
Yeah, no, definitely not. It's kind of long too. Like
it is.
And you know, we're complaining about, you know, maybe wanting more. I don't know if I would want more runtime, but like I think it needed to be in that 90 minute range for maybe it to be more appealing to like a general teen crowd.
Yeah, I mean, personally, if I'm fixing this movie, I'm swapping out long stretches of this for something else.
Yeah. And I wasn't even able to find a rank at the box office because it was too low.
That's fair. So.
But how about our scores?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I've been thinking about this since I watched it last night.
Right.
And there's going to be a couple while I'm live figuring out how I feel. Yeah. But Kyle, let's start us off with your enjoyment.
I put this at a 2.
I put it at 2.5. I also felt like it wasn't entertaining, but I was still drawn by elements of it. I think mostly wishing it was a better entertaining movie, but
yeah,
I still realize that there is something here and a reason for it to be a cult classic. I totally just didn't see it.
Yeah.
What's your craft?
I gave this a 2.5. It was clearly a low budget movie. It did feel like that sometimes. I don't know if you noticed, but there was a lot of sound mixing issues. Like maybe it was just from my soundbar, but like some scenes, especially when he was in the hospital, Seymour, it suddenly felt like they were using the in-camera audio and not like an actual mic.
Interesting.
It was very strange. And I also found the editing to be kind of weird sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so, but like still like competently made. So 2.5.
Yeah, I'm also going to go 2.5 for that. Nothing jumped out to me. And I agree that there were some weird editing choices that were made. There were just like cuts I didn't fully follow or understand and just felt like things were not where a narrative place should have been to put them. So I agree with that. What's your execution?
This is also a 2.5. You know what? I really do like a lot of the acting in this. I think that the three main leads are pretty good. ScarJo is putting on this like really low voice. I don't know if maybe that was just like her thing in the early 2000s. We'll see another movie with her in it later this season. But like she just has that really low, raspy voice that I know she still uses you know, it's her, obviously her voice, but yeah. I felt like she was really selling it in this movie. And Steve Buscemi also really good, but I don't know if he could ever do really that much wrong.
No, and this seemed like a kind of really scaled back role for him, because Seymour is not a very multi-dimensional person. He has a bit of an arc to him, but it seems like not a difficult character to capture.
No, he's pretty reserved, except for that one scene where he's yelling at the mother and her child in the stroller.
Yeah,
that was a pretty good bit.
I'm going to give it a 3. I do think there were a couple things that were cool. I really did enjoy the scene with Enid listening to that blues record. Mm. And that was the moment where I thought maybe we can get somewhere that I enjoy it going, but we just never had another heartfelt moment with her. So it kind of lost me there. But I enjoyed how they mixed the music with her performance, of just kind of watching her sit back and relax and actually have like a moment of actually enjoying something.
Yeah, totally.
And yeah, like the performances were fine. Nothing blew me away. So that's peaking at a 3. What's your rewatchability?
I put this at a 1. I don't think I will ever rewatch this. And I also can't imagine myself recommending it to somebody unless I saw that they were basically Enid. Like, I don't know. I feel like the people that are going to love this movie are going to find this movie. Mm-hmm. And the people that are not going to love this movie, it's just never going to come into their world, basically.
Yeah. I'm going to put this at a 2. Mm. I feel like there are scenarios where I would be interested in watching it again. If someone came up to me and said, hey, Ghost World's my favorite movie, and I'm going to tell you why while we watch it, I would watch it again. And I feel like I know Enid. So I'm going to put this at a 2. Kyle, you have given this movie an 8 out of 20 for a 40%. I've gone a little bit more charitable at a 10 out of 20 for a 50%. Now, ranking time. Are you ready for yours?
Yeah.
Memento, Ocean's 11, Harry Potter, Spy Kids, Gosford Park. Where is this going for you?
I don't think it's going to be any surprise. It's going to my number 6 spot below Gosford Park.
Well, you got the G's together. I was hovering over Gosford Park. I knew it was going to be either above or below. Yeah. I think I'm going to put this. Oh, it's tough. It's right there with Gosford Park. Which one did I give a higher score to? I gave Gosford Park a higher score by 1. So I guess I'm going to put this in the ranking below Gosford Park.
Hmm.
I thought Gosford was going to be riding the bottom for a while, but one weekend it has salvation.
Yeah. It was kind of a surprise to me how much I didn't connect with this, though, because I was expecting kind of like a early 2000s comedy teen movie that was maybe a little edgy, but also still uplifting and fun. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't really find that there was much fun to be had here. And so I was a little disappointed. And I was obviously anticipating great things with those Rotten Tomatoes scores. Like, there's a lot of love there, but.
Yeah, I was expecting to get into this one about the same as I thought about Licorice Pizza, where like I just sat in the world and had a fun time watching it unfold for a while, but I never really had that much of a fun time with this one.
Yeah. Well, do you want to hear some funny Letterboxd reviews?
Oh, yes, I do.
All right. Well, because we were such a downer on it, I've included mostly positive reviews. It has a 3.6 out of 5 on Letterboxd, so pretty much straight there in the average for Letterboxd. This is the lowest, and we go up. 3 stars by Ely. There was a moment in this movie where I found Steve Buscemi attractive for about 7 seconds, and I will never be the same again.
What? Where did they not? They had to timestamp that. If you're going to make that much of a specific claim about finding Steve Buscemi attractive, I need a timestamp.
Yeah, there was actually a lot of people talking about Steve Buscemi being attractive. There was another review. I didn't write this down because it was basically derivative of a lot of the Steve Buscemi's attractive sort of thing, where it was like, I related to this movie a lot because I also found Steve Buscemi attractive at an alarmingly young age. So it was weird.
Okay, there is a mental health crisis going on around here. If that many people are saying, yeah, Steve Buscemi, I'd slap that up. Unbelievable. That's not the point of the movie.
Oh, okay. This is 3.5 by Laura. ScarJo saying he gives me like a total boner in her deep monotone voice got me feeling some time of way.
Sometime.
Love the lack of energy. Go girl, give us nothing.
That's a good ending on that one.
How old were they? She was 15 at the time. Oh. I don't know how old Enid's actress was. I feel like she was a little bit older.
I feel like that too.
I actually... that came up because I actually wrote that as part of my fact that ScarJo was 15 at the time, because I was trying to do some math of like how old she was based on how old she was now. But like when they filmed it and when her birthday is, yeah, she was 15. So ooh. I thought she was a little bit older.
Now I'm curious how old Thora Birch was at the time.
Yeah.
She was born in 1982. So yeah, she was about 20. But I was thinking because she actually kissed Steve Buscemi.
She was 18. 82 and they filmed in 2000.
Right. So yeah, she was 18. Still weird.
Yeah.
But significantly better than if she was also 15.
Yeah, totally. All right. 4 stars on a rewatch by Becca. Why does the scene with Steve Buscemi eating chicken have better sound editing than like 75% of the movie? I'm hearing that chicken chewing in HD.
It was a weird choice. She was going to just chow down on that chicken.
All right. And lastly, 4.5 stars on a rewatch by Keith. That moment when Rebecca is showing Enid her new apartment and says, oh, wait, I have to show you something really cool, then proceeds to show her a fold-out ironing board. There has never been a more accurate example of the transition from adolescence to adulthood.
Very true. That said, kind of wicked. Yeah. Anything that folds out is so rare nowadays that I would have my mind blown. I saw a buddy of mine in one of the places he was living at had a fold-out guest bed. Ooh. That shit fucking rocked. God, that was cool.
Yeah.
Well, that iron board, clearly not the same level. You can't sleep on it, but still pretty wicked.
Yeah. Well, if you guys didn't need any sort of proof that maybe we didn't relate to Enid in this movie, that was it. All right. Academy Awards. Did it?
No. I'm going to guess.
Actually, it did.
Why?
Best Adapted Screenplay.
Interesting.
Yes.
Interesting.
It didn't win, but it was nominated.
I'm going to remember that for later.
Put that down for later, too. Yeah. Other notable awards, it was the Writers Guild of America nominee for Best Adapted Screenplay. Steve Buscemi and Thora Birch were nominated for Golden Globes for Supporting Actor and Best Actress in a Motion Picture, Comedy, or Musical. And Steve Buscemi was actually nominated for 22 Supporting Actor awards across critics groups and won 11 of them. So went 50%.
Good for him.
Yeah.
I'll never disagree with Steve Buscemi getting some golds.
Yeah, I'll be curious about the rest of the supporting actor race at the end of this. I think he's kind of on the outside. He didn't immediately jump out to me, but he is still like giving that Steve Buscemi quality that you expect from Steve Buscemi.
Oh, yeah.
And even though he is doing quite of a reserved performance, it is still a good performance. So
yeah, exactly. I'll nothing wrong with it.
All right. Interesting facts. Scarlett Ingrid Johansson, another interesting thing you didn't know, Ingrid is her real name. Yeah, was 15 when they filmed this movie. She was also apparently married to Ryan Reynolds for 3 years from 2008 to 2011. Did you know this?
No, what?
Yeah, that's not related to this movie, but I just found it and I needed to tell somebody.
That's wild. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that at all.
Huh. I assume Ryan Reynolds was always married to Blake Lively.
That's what I thought too, but he married her in 2012, a year after he ended his marriage with Scarlett Johansson. Or, you know, he didn't necessarily end it, but they ended their marriage.
Weird.
Yeah. Scarlett Johansson has had 3 husbands, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's just at some point, you don't have to marry them all. You can just have a relationship. Oh, well, good for them,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. So not really related to this movie.
Yeah.
But,
but that is something to chew on. I never knew that.
Yeah. According to the director, Terry Zwigoff, Steve Buscemi was so uncomfortable playing the role of Seymour that whenever shooting was finished for the day, he would immediately change his clothes so he could look completely different.
Yeah, fair play. That I wouldn't want to be Seymour. The whole point is to not be Seymour ever in your life. And he had to be that guy for like how long it took to shoot that.
Yeah, I mean, he had a pretty cool record collection. I'll give him that. As someone with a pretty cool Blu-ray and 4K collection, I can say game respect game.
You don't have to say that.
All right. More Seymour facts. You want to see more facts?
I do.
Okay. The character of Seymour appears only as the victim of the girl's prank in the comic and was made more significant at Terry Zwigoff's suggestion. Another change includes Rebecca having a rather diminished role compared to her role in the comic, which gave a more balanced amount of attention to both girls. So not only, as I mentioned before, did Rebecca have more play in the comic, but Seymour had less.
Interesting. Because Seymour is not like that complex of a character, but he feels like he could have been one of the main characters of that world.
Totally. And because the movie seemingly revolves a lot around Seymour in Enid's journey. It's weird that in the comics, that was only the prank. That was all that he had part of it. So
yeah.
Last one. The film was not an easy sell to mainstream audiences or to us, which got studios thinking of the strangest ways to make it more accessible. According to Terry Swigoff, one executive suggested that the bus at the end have the destination art school spelled out on it.
Oh, that's so stupid. God, no.
Another suggestion was a double wedding where Enid married Seymour and Rebecca marries Josh.
No, that's all awful. That's way worse. God, no. It sucks. Stop writing.
I love hearing about shitty studio notes. It's so funny to me.
Art, I'm going to art school. That's like the equivalent of having like a screen at the end like, Enid died on her way to art school.
Yeah, one of those just like that they do in the true stories where they play what happens afterwards.
Seymour has been arrested on.
Oh, well, that was it for my interesting facts. But do you have any final thoughts on Ghost World?
Not particularly. I feel like I'm going to forget this one pretty fast. And by the end of the season, when we're getting to the rankings, I'm going to go, what was Ghost World again?
Yeah. I totally agree. I've just like it's actively voiding my brain, especially because, you know, peek behind the Snubs and Doves curtain. We're doing two episodes in a row right here. Wow. And the movie that we also watched has held a large place in my brain.
Powerhouse.
Yeah. So I think this one didn't really stand a chance there. Well, I want to thank you guys for listening to season 3, episode 6 of Snubs and Dubs. As always, you can find us everywhere on social media at Snubs and Dubs. That's on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Letterboxd, etc. We're also on Good Pod, so make sure to check us out there and join our official Discord. We'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on Ghost World or on this episode. So please send us a tweet or a message with a question, recommendation, or anything else. I'm also at Kyle Tobiasen on Twitter, and Jason is at Wendy_Mills. Of course, all of those links will be in the show notes. Make sure to leave a 5-star review, share the show to everyone you know, and check back next week for another episode. Here's a sneak peek of the film we're going to talk about.
You're not exactly what I expected.
One name spells adventure.
How about him?
Before this is over, I'm going to need a whole lot of serious therapy.
One name.
Don't look down.
Trick, I'm looking down.
Spells romance.
It's no way to behave in front of a princess.
She's as nasty as you are.
Come on!
That's right. Next time we're talking about Shrek, so make sure to watch it before next episode. Can't wait for you guys to hear it. Thanks for listening. That's a wrap. Bye.
Bye for now.